Good morning. Thank you for all your efforts so far with Session, doing the honest work of Session. It's nice to have the Buddha Hall so full. There's a lot of people in here. Reminds me of that, the old story, the tale in the tradition where it says when Bimalakirti is sick and he's in the small room, it's like a 10 by 8 or something like that, and all of the people are there, all the followers of the Buddha and also all of the bodhisattvas and pratyeka Buddhas, not sure what they are. And Everybody's piled in for Bimalakirti, so kind of reminds me of that. And I thought I'd like to bring up a case koan as a talking point. This one from the Blue Cliff record, and I have this translation by Thomas Cleary. Of course, such a prolific translator. Remember when I first moved here and was living here, we had the older copy of the translation of the Blue Cliff, and then I read that there was a new one coming out called this one, Secrets of the Blue Cliff, and I was excited because I thought it might give me a leg up. Yeah.
The answers are in the back.
Right. Okay. Exactly. But actually, it's wonderful comments by Hakuin Zenji and Tenkei Densun. So, and their comments are perhaps as difficult as the koans. So, anyway, we'll see. I'll bring up the case. This is case 24, then, the called the Iron Grindstone. Introduction or pointer. When you stand on the summit of the highest peak, demons and outsiders cannot know you. When you walk on the floor of the deepest ocean, even the Buddha's eyes cannot see you. Even if your perception is swift as a shooting star and your action is like lightning, you still do not escape the fate of the sacred tortoise dragging its tail. When you get here, what is proper? In the case, Iron Grindstone Ryu went to Isan. Isan said, "Old cow, you've come." She said, "Tomorrow there's a great communal feast on Mount Tai. Are you going?" Isan lay down. Iron Grindstone Ryu then left. There's a verse also, and perhaps I can bring that up a little later. So, Iron Grindstone Ryu went to Isan, and this is one of the few cases we have in the tradition where we have a female protagonist as one of the main parts of the koan. Iron Grindstone Ryu is a nickname, obviously. There isn't a wealth of anecdotes or teachings that are left behind in the record. I was looking into it briefly earlier. One thing I found is that, well, she earned this nickname of Iron Grindstone by basically chewing up male Zen students in Dharma combat. Right, so people expressing their Zen, and she would often, I was going to say destroy them, which is, really grind them up. She was known, and it said that, and the translation it said for her style was precipitously probably pronounced that wrong, precipitously dangerous and awesome, which is... So here we have Iron Grindstone Ryu going to see Master Isan. Was a student of Isan's, and I imagine, or I think probably also a successor, very, very close to him. He was one of the founders of what became the Igyo school, which is one of the principal five houses of Zen, with his kind of equally famous successors. As a family style or expression, they used symbols within their teaching. So not always, of course, teaching isn't always a matter of words. There are many devices that can be used as pointers. One of the principal one in their school was this use of symbols. And some of that still continues or survives within the tradition today. And in this particular case, so this would be reaching back to around the 9th century China, which is pretty late Tang or early Song, I'm not sure. So around in that era. And Isan is quite old. And Ryu is living close by in a hermitage and comes by to see him occasionally. So this is something of the background. Isan, again, is quite old. When we look around here, some of us are quite old. Some of us quite young. It's a curious thing. I know I'm getting older. When I look in the mirror and my thought is, I don't look that bad today. That's a change. And, you know, I appear as old to younger people. And then I'll talk with someone who's much older than I am, and they'll say, you're not old. Yeah. You don't know what that is. I was driving with my son recently, going to school, and he brought this up. He said, how old are you now? I said, I'm 46. He's like, that's old. And I said, yeah, and you're 14. I said, but look at it this way. In 100 years, which isn't that long, really, in 100 years, we'll all be dead. So he must have prodded me a bit for me to be that kind of blunt. And there was a pause, and he said, should we put some music on? Which I think is a great thing to say in that circumstance, you know. Why not, huh? Let's put some music on. But whatever age we are, in that sense, in that relative sense, whatever label that we put on or take off, intrinsically, it's of no real consequence. Yeah. And this is a wonderful equality that we have. That we are, you know, to sit together, young and old, male and female, everyone, all together, in the silence and the stillness of Zazen, where the truth, the realization of non-difference can sink in, can become apparent. And it's important that when we cross the threshold, when we enter, that the age, the label, the rank, the story, whatever else, is put aside. It may be that we carry something in the gate. We bring something in. Sometimes people will come in here with an idea, or they have some kind of understanding, or there's a bone that's been chewed on, and they bring that up. That's fine. But really, coming in here, in sitting, it's a matter of surrender. It's not a matter of surrender to something, certainly not to someone. But the surrender, the active surrender to things as they are, the active surrender to this extraordinary mystery, now, ageless, timeless, mysterious. We may obscure that, of course, with our the current weather of the mind and our long accumulated conditioning, you know, and the identifications that we have as a person. Zazen is the opportunity to go beyond that, to let that go, to see beyond that veil, to let the identifications go. We could sit here and be nobody, really be nobody at all. As it says in the dual mirror samadhi, we've been chanted each afternoon in training period, practice secretly, like a fool, like an idiot. You don't have to wear your practice like clothes. Rather, when it's time to do zazen, then enter wholeheartedly into zazen. Sit. Be completely involved with sitting. Completely involved with walking. Whatever identifications are these things that we cherish in the mind, the ways that we describe life, nothing stands up to the glacial pace of zazen. It can be dissolved. That's why we do so much of it. Nothing really needs to be said. Nothing really needs to be done. And we have the great teacher, the vehicle of the schedule. Whatever the activity of that time is. Having the trust and faith. Or discovering or illumining the trust and faith that this present expression is the correct one, is the only Dharma we'll find. So in this meeting, Hakuin comments, this is a meeting of adepts. There's no views of Buddha or opinions of Dharma. Isan and Ryu, two people meeting one another and a dialogue taking place. So Isan is perhaps resting, and Ryu turns up at the door and he sees her and he knows her. He says, old cow, which is a play on words and a play on her name. There's nothing derogatory about it. It's very little tongue-in-cheek. It's a play on her name. And also that character, the cow, it's the same character, Chinese for ox. And so perhaps you might remind us of the ox herding pictures. The water buffalo used in a way to point at our true nature, original nature. So with these koans, although they may just be two or three lines long, there's never really a word wasted. Everything that's really said here, again, is a pointer, is worthy of inquiry, to look at it. You know, it's an extraordinary thing, isn't it, that we can reach back to here, 9th century China, all those many years ago. And yet, it resounds now. We're gathered in a hall. We're at a temple or a training center, not dissimilar to a situation like this. Old cow, you've arrived. You've come and you've arrived. Have you arrived? It's a question for each of us. Have you arrived? Or are you? Do you feel like you're still on your way somewhere? Old cow, you've arrived. And she said, tomorrow there's a great communal feast on Mount Tai. Are you going? Yisan lay down. So for some context, apparently Mount Tai was a couple of hundred miles away, which makes a question absurd. It's a great feast tomorrow, Mount Tai, a couple of hundred miles away. Are you going? You know, now in our modern context, we could say, you know, there's going to be a big event going on in Rome tomorrow. Are you? Well, actually, you could get to Rome tomorrow, couldn't you? Mars. That made me think of Elon Musk could probably get us to Mars, but you get the point. So, like a galaxy far, far away, there's a big meal going on there tomorrow. Are you going? Yisan lay down. Why does she ask such questions like this? Yeah. It was her style. Many of these koans are this way, where there's a probe, where teachers or those who are accomplished, somewhat accomplished in the way, will check in on one another, always testing, always refining. And that's an important thing, of course, to always refine and always be ready to learn. There's a great feast. Are you going? And when we come into session, particularly in the beginning parts, those first sits, the first couple of days, there's a certain amount of processing going on. Yeah, our mind is often quite busy, or at least the thought stream aspect is busy with this and that. And we directly see, you really see, how the mind is on that level, the content, you know, how stirred up we become, always planning, always thinking of what's next, always working towards the next best thing, how to get there. We're wired that way biologically. It's an extraordinary thing. You know, it's brought us through these millions of years of evolution, always, you know, planning in that way. But we're perhaps overly good at that. always futurizing. Or maybe we could take it the other way. The arrow turns the other way and we're looking back into the past with nostalgia or regret or picking over things which have caused pain and difficulty. And not at all that any of these things are wrong. Not a matter of getting away from thinking about past or thinking about future or thinking about present. The mind, the brain, in that sense, does what it does. As Uchiyama Roshi said, her brain secretes thoughts. It's a nice way to depersonalize it. It secretes thoughts. But in settling down, or in our practice, in the art of Zazen, it is most essential to cease adding to that thought stream, to stop pursuing after things. To stop going somewhere else, whether backward or forward. Rather to, with a straight back and open attention, to realize this expression. Now, not a matter of going somewhere else, getting away from the circumstances. This present expression may show up as discomfort, difficulty, and a wealth of what we would call more negative feelings and conditions. And it may show up and be experienced on the other side, positive. But really, it's not a matter of that, whether it's positive or negative. As our Zen, rather, is the awareness that goes beyond the manipulation of our conditioning, our experience. And when we sit down, sit all the way down. Nothing else to do. Sounds very simple. But with time, as these days go by, we enter into the activity over and over of the schedule in the long periods of Zazen. Something becomes apparent. Something becomes much more tangible. Where we are, where we always are, really becomes front and center. Can be experienced in that way. It's not on Mount Tai. It's not tomorrow. You know, recently I was sitting here, you know, in the whatever the musings are going through the head. You know, things are going on. And then we had an earthquake. Not a strong one. You know, but I was up out of my seat on the way to check on my son like before I knew really what I was doing. You know, it was amazing. It was like you could be thinking about next week, but when there's an earthquake, it will enliven and point you to the proper context of the moment. You know? Here, this is where the power is. This is where the freedom is. Zazen is refuge. Refuge in that way. To be ourself. Completely ourself. You know, we're so stirred up by our perception of other often. I say we, I am. You may be different. But usually most of my trouble comes from other people. Or what I... I've never had much trouble with this mat I'm sitting on, but with other people, that's often a lot of the work. The triggers. But if we're always pursuing and reaching into there, what's going on, and obsessing over the few things that are wrong and where we want to get to so that it will be right, then we stay on the wheel of circumstances, always trying to right the ship. On the human level, the people and things, there will always be difficulty. The difficulty doesn't have to be a problem. There are just difficulties. Isan really shows the place of no difficulty in a very clear expression. How are you going to Mount Tai tomorrow? Do you want to go somewhere else? Better, shinier, with a bit more money and some time off? Or whatever else, whatever baubles, He lays down. What does that show? Sesshin reveals that. The rest here. This is the place to feel your roots. The place to be at home. So that when the difficult circumstances, challenges, and there are plenty, come along, you aren't shaken out of your core. You know it has been made real that who, what, and where you are is in the perfect place to meet that. That the function of this moment can come forth. It doesn't have to be thought up or conjured up or planned. You act. One thing occurs, you meet one thing. As Master Hakuin says, a meeting of adepts, there's no views or opinions of Dharma here. All that then is extra. There's this great, this is extraordinary, ordinary life. He lay down, and Iron Grindstone Ryu then left. I have this old bookmark here. I'm not sure where it came from. It has a quote on it from Henry V. And it says, we would not seek a battle as we are, yet as we are, we will not shun it. I think that's a great quote for Sesshin. We come here. You don't seek out a battle. You don't look for suffering or difficulties. Yet, as we are, we'll not shun it. As difficulties come forward. It's so easy to fall into, shouldn't be this way. It's his fault. It's because it's set up wrong. That's why it's his fault, their fault, or whatever reasons we can make that the present condition isn't the one. That it's the right one. It's always the right one. As it is, it don't shun it. But allow. What? You allow it. Allow. This life. What's the other option? It's to struggle against reality. In the verse it says, she rode an iron horse into the double fortress. An edict came down reporting the Six Nations cleared. Still holding the golden whip, she questioned a soldier who'd come back. In the depths of the night, who goes together walking the royal road? She rode an iron horse into the double fortress. It's one of these verses, it's a little, can be a little heavy in sort of militaristic kind of terms. But then this was 9th century China. And in that period where these cases was taking place, there was a lot of war. There was a lot of civil strife. You know, is that so different today? It may not be just right outside, but it is not so different today. She rode an iron horse into the fortress. And this, you know, you can see that this comments on Ryu going to see Yi-san. She questioned a soldier who'd come back. An old general. 1,000 battles behind him. But she still asks her question. You know, that's the thing. It's like when you become... We're blessed to have, you know, a room full of teachers. Yeah. Right? And, of course, good teachers, they don't stand on their laurels. Okay, done now. It's not what it's about. And in our tradition, we can look back to a time where Iron Grindstone Ryu was one of the lone women who's remembered in these cases, or a remarkable person she must have been to shatter that bamboo ceiling, right? But now, where we are now, in this lineage, you have Maizumi Roshi, who of course had many female successors. It would have been, I think, even in number if Gyoku Roshi and Seisen Roshi lived long enough to finish their transmission. And in this room, women represented, perhaps not quite in the numbers of men here. But you're in the right place, the right time. And the most important thing, particularly at this point in Sesshin, you know, with that radical honesty, you know, to really look in or look here and see, am I at home? Is this satisfying? Is it done? Is it real? Am I still trying to get to Mount Tai? And there's plenty of time in Sesshin. Still, with just a couple of days left. A day. A block of Zazen. One period. Plenty of opportunity. To really to be real. To be honest with this practice. To check the baggage at the door. To let the constructions melt away. To really allow oneself to sit. says that in the tradition, it says there are three great pillars to Zen: faith, doubt, and determination. You know, I need to have faith in something, not in something, not in someone. Allow that faith, allow faith to come forward. If there is doubt, allow doubt to rise up, to come forward. If there are things, if there are sticking points, if there is confused, something not understood, if there's something that's being gnawed on, let it come up. Bring it out into the light. This is the time to clarify and go beyond complications or imagined limitations. And that last one, you know, determination, essential determination. If it's difficult, it's difficult. Keep going. Keep going. Be sure. Don't waste time. Do our best. And know that even if you're having a terrible time of it, you're showing up and sitting supports everybody else. At the very least, you do that. And thank you for your sincere efforts. We'll continue.
Sentient beings are